It's the internet. You're busy. Let's do this. Welcome to the Games Beat Decides podcast. This is the podcast where we decide everything happening in the world of games so you don't have to think for yourself. I'm your host, Jeffrey Grubb. With me is
Mike Minotti.
Today's episode, we're going to talk about some news and some games. First, though, I'm wondering how you're doing, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. You know, a little tired. That's typical. Yeah, I feel all right.
Yeah. How was the week without me? The week and a half without me?
Week? I felt, yeah, you were gone forever. I thought you were taking
a week.
Yeah,
it took like 10 days, yeah.
Wow.
Like 9 days off.
I should have done that. In my mind, I'm like, weeks are what people take. I should have taken more, too.
Yep, I kind of like tried to spread it out over like a 3-week period. It was like, I took a Friday off and then a Monday and a Tuesday off and then a whole week in between. It worked out really well.
Yeah, I feel like it was relatively quiet while you were gone. Like,
yeah, it seemed
I feel like we would have done a podcast during your vacation, but like not much even happened really. So
yeah, there was stuff to talk about, but it was you're right. We didn't miss much. When I was going back and looking at news, it didn't seem like much we would even need to talk about on this week's episode. So but a lot happened in this past week though. Just since I've been back and even before that. So we'll get into all that real soon though. First though, I want to thank everybody for joining us. You can get more from me and Mike at gamespeed.com. If you have something to share with us, email the podcast at games plus podcast at ventribute.com. That's the plus sign. Thank you to Carlos Sain, who is Insane in the Rain Music on YouTube, for the use of our theme song. And then if you are listening to this on like the website player widget or watching on YouTube or Twitch, you could subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever your pods are caught. And if you like the show, rate us wherever you're listening. It helps. All right, so let's get into the news, Mike. First up is Rocksteady confirmed the Suicide Squad, which I'm gonna keep tripping over that word for a while, but they confirmed it. Yeah, I don't know. I just can't handle it today. And they confirmed it in a tweet. They said it's gonna be at DC Fandom, which is DC's like kind of like alternative to Comic Con, which is coming up here.
DC Direct
September. Yeah, it's a DC Direct. That's right.
Everyone's doing Direct now, except for Nintendo.
Yeah, it's funny how that works out that way. I hope they have Bakugan there at the DC Fandom for sure.
Oh my god! At the end of Suicide Squad, Nick Fury is going to recruit Bakugan into the Suicide Squad.
I love it. That sounds like a plan. Yeah, I would watch that.
Nick Fury's in Marvel. I hope I get a comment like that. It'd be great. All right.
Oh, yeah, you definitely will. You definitely will. I feel like this game got started in a different world where, I think they started making this game well after Suicide Squad came out.
So I think Jason Schreier just said that he believes that at first a different Warner Brothers company was working on this. I forget which one of the other big ones. And like,
Montreal. I think it's
Montreal now. Right. Right. Yeah. The ones doing Court of Owls. So they were doing this and apparently they were happy with it. So now Rocksteady's doing it. And apparently like some people are still saying this is a while away too. So, but like, right. Like that's what got my question. Like, when did they decide to do this? Cause it just seems like, I don't know, even with the new Suicide Squad movie, I just tripped over it. Suicide Squad movie coming out. It does feel like, I just don't know how much people want this right now. I don't know. Maybe, you know, not that my pulse is super on the culture right now, but I know that I'm certainly over the kind of, you know, edgy, like grim, funny, you know, irreverent. Everything's kind of a joke and, you know, morals are stupid. Ha ha. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's really it. Right. Like somebody just, gosh, I wish I knew. Like some gaming journalist, wrote this great story about like why black and white stories actually are good because everything's about morally gray, right? And you know, this point is like, you know, sometimes people are just bad and some people are just good. Like obviously not in every way, but in ways that matter. And that's just kind of like why I think a lot of people like superheroes in the first place. And I feel like when we had all these shades of gray, I think it was interesting for a while just because we have had 50 years of superhero stories. But I know like right now I could certainly just go for some old school, you know, good guys and bad guys. I think that's why I even like the Spider-Man game. And I think I talked about that back then, but this is a lot of criticism for a game that only exists as a tweet right now. So I kind of like feel bad letting down on it, but I don't know.
I don't think that's it's not unfair because I mean that is the reality. I mean, look, the Suicide Squad has its fans, and they're usually fans of the comic books. And I, you know, I know some people that really like that series and liked it before the movies and can have continued to like it. And they say the current run is very good, but even among DC fans, that's like a minority. It's a small group of people. So, you know, when you're coming in making this game, it is trading culturally on the movie. And I think a big part of it now might be the hope that the James Gunn, the Suicide Squad sequel is going to sort of redeem it. But you know, that's not the world that they started making this game in. Probably was not a world in which James Gunn was making that movie. It was definitely just like, oh, that movie made a lot of money. So let's go ahead and it won an Oscar, of course, for costumes. So it's an Oscar winning film. Why not make a game on it? Yeah. And but I agree though. It's when I think about it, I get exhausted. I'm just like, I am not, I like these anti-hero games are, I think Rocksteady is a good fit for that, because I think their Batman character was very much an anti-hero. He was very much like rough edge Batman, and you know, very violent and very much about breaking bones and stuff. And that got, like, I kind of fell off those games because of that stuff a little bit. So my favorite was Arkham Asylum, and then I liked them less and less as time went on. And I didn't think that was a big part of it. So maybe this is a good fit for the studio and what they want to make. But that movie is bad. It's really bad.
I never even saw it. I mean,
no, yeah, but it's not worth your time. It's a very bad movie.
I know is that because of it. I like half of the people I saw for Halloween that year were dressed as Harley Quinn.
Right.
That was my takeaway from that movie.
And I think that, you know, DC has, I think this is almost a problem for DC, is that, you know, I made a tweet about this as a joke today, but like people say, like, DC's villains are, you know, so much better than Marvel's or whatever. And really the reason you go to DC is for the complex and interesting villains. And I think it serves it really well in comic books. But when you try to make movies out of it, I think we've seen that trying to build a universe that thrives on, you know, an interconnected movie universe, that tries to trade on villains, it doesn't work as well as having these hero characters that can just go from movie to movie and be the center pillars of these movies in the way that Marvel can. And I think maybe the same might be true in games, where you know, these villains are, it looks like they're going to be taking on Superman, and
I think the whole Justice League is the idea.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Justice League but they've gone rogue, or, you know, they've been taken over or whatever, which is a trope I do not like, by the way. Every TV show ever that is in any way a genre show has that episode, or multiple episodes, where like one of the main characters like gets possessed and now they're a bad guy for an episode. And I'm like, I can't stand this. It happens all the time. I hate it. But you know, whatever, you know, we'll see how this game turns out. But I'm not thrilled about the idea of a whole movie where you're supposed to play as the guys that are, once everything goes back to normal, they're supposed to lose and kind of get thrown aside for the ongoing story of the hero. Now, I'm sure people disagree with that, because Suicide Squad does have its fans, like I said. But I don't know. I a lot of this is, we're going to see like what it looks like probably a little bit at FanDome. It does sound like it is still pretty far away. I bet we also see the Batman game that Montreal is working on, which is probably closer. But if they were working on Suicide Squad and then moved over to Batman, maybe that game is actually still further away than we think as well. So
I'm just not
excited yet.
So right.
I liked Rocksteady.
Right. And just like, again, seeing like that teaser image where it's like Superman with like the Suicide Squad crosshairs on, it's like, man, like, of course in 2020, that would be the year when I actually want a game where I play Superman, that's the year where I get a game where I have to kill him instead.
Yeah. And it's very much, I don't want to be looking at, oh, heroes can be complex. Like, there's that show The Boys on Amazon based on the comic series, and that's fine, but that's kind of like the most I could take of that stuff right now, where it's like, what if superheroes were just as petty and you know, manipulative as regular people? And it's like, okay, it's an interesting idea to explore. We've done it for a while. This is another good example of that. I just don't need everything happening in the world of comics to be that.
Right. I mean, yeah.
But that's me, and it's a taste thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not excited about it, I guess. Even though, like, again, Rockstar's, you know, they're great. I like their Batman games quite a lot. I think I stuck around with them more than you did. Even though, like, Arkham Knight's not my favorite, I think I still defend that game a little bit. Like, I like the Bat Tank stuff in it fine. But still,
yeah, I'm sure it's fine. Yeah. It was more the character that was turning me off, I think, at a certain
point. Right. This isn't where I want to go, especially because, like, I'm curious to see the gameplay, because, like, I mean, first off, we don't know, like, do you play as, like, a bunch of different characters? How would you distinguish them from each other? Is it basically just going to be Arkham-style combat? There's a lot of questions.
Yep, definitely. And I'm ready for Rocksteady to prove me wrong. So let's wait and see. All right. Earlier in the week, Sony announced they were going to have a State of Play on Thursday, which was yesterday as we're recording this. And, you know, they told people, you show up if you want, but it's not going to be like PS5 stuff. It's okay if you don't. Like,
I love how these companies are just so, like, afraid of the negative reaction now, is that it's the opposite of what used to be. It used to be like, you want to get people hyped. Now it's like, you want people to not be expecting much. You want to really, like, set the bar low, is how it is.
Right. Like, please just remember to take your medication, everybody, and then show up and, like, maybe just have a drink and relax. Yeah. And maybe we'll see some fun games. Let's not get too crazy, though. And that's basically how the State of Play played out, right? Like, it was, I don't know. It's fine. There's a bunch of games there that look interesting. I'm not too excited about anything that I saw, I don't think.
Yeah. I'm excited to play Braid again, and then I remember that Jonathan Blow is kind of a weirdo on Twitter now, and I'm like, I guess I'm still excited to play that. I wish he was less weird, but
yeah,
I'd like to Braid a lot back. And yeah, he's a weird guy, which, I mean, I guess after playing Braid and The Witness, that's not too surprising.
Yeah, and I still really like The Witness, too. It's a really like
The Witness.
Yeah, it's like a top 50 game for me.
I think you like Witness more than anyone I know. Not that there's anything wrong with that. True. I won't make fun of you for that. I'll make fun of you for other
games. No, I mean, yeah, I'll defend that game. I won't defend Jonathan Blow, though. I do think he is, he's kind of a shithead. But, that's the point. We're talking about Braid coming out of this thing. And, you know, it is a 10-year-old game.
Also, it's coming to all the other
12-year-old. Yeah, of
course. Braid's not a PlayStation 5 exclusive or anything.
And it's, I think, you know, there's Spelunky fans that were very excited to see more Spelunky 2. And I think it got a release date. I'm not sure if that release date was confirmed before this, September 15th, I think.
Yeah, that was
the and, you know, that's great. I like Spelunky, and I'll play Spelunky 2. But for me, this whole idea of a roguelite platformer exploration game was perfected with Dead Cells. So it'll be hard for me to go back to Spelunky 2, which I think has
the Spelunky 1 for whatever reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, I think it's people are going to disagree, but I think it's artificially limited by the way the character attacks, like the really short whip feel. And I know you can, like, upgrade weapons at the shop or whatever, get a shotgun and things like that, but just the basic attack didn't feel too good. And then Dead Cells comes along and completely blows that away. And, you know, it's maybe an unfair comparison. They're going for different things. And I know Spelunky is about, like, learning your lessons and taking those lessons into the next thing and making deep discoveries in this very systematic game. But just there's some basic functionality that I felt didn't feel great. And I think I wrote that in a review for Spelunky on Xbox Live forever ago. You know, that's awesome that, you know, that did get confirmed. It is going to be a very popular game with, you know, a crowd that loved Spelunky. I don't know. Beyond that, I thought that Hood game looked cool. I think Hood, Outlaws and Legends.
I was probably more cynical about that one. That one looks,
it's fair.
It's okay. I mean, it looks so Assassin's Creed-y. I mean, the guy even had a hidden blade at one point, I think.
Yeah, but it's definitely not Assassin's Creed, though.
No, it's not. It's like, it almost looks like a bit like that. What was that game that Ubisoft had? Not even like that.
Oh, For Honor?
For Honor, a little. I don't know how to peg it. It's multiplayer, I know that.
Yeah, it's like they're calling it PvPvE, and the idea is, like, there's two four-person squads, and both of them are racing to get a, basically just a loot or chest. They're performing a heist, and that heist, the loot there is protected by AI-controlled guards. So, you could try to get to the treasure first, but then, you know, the other team might have been spending the whole time setting up a trap for you on the way out so they could just steal it while you do the hard work, and then they just kill you and take it. It's, you know, it's Rainbow Six Siege, you know, meets Payday 2 is what it sounds like. And I think there's a lot of potential there. But you're right. It does look like a generic Assassin's Creed in terms of style, which
I guess stylistically, I wasn't falling for it.
Right, and I think maybe that might be the detriment there. Where I think if they had made it like a modern game, with the same exact setup, it might have been, I might be more excited about it. You know, as is, I'll still try it. And I think there's a lot of potential, but again, this is like, this is the level of game we're talking about coming out of this thing. I don't know. Anything else stick out to you that you would want to talk about?
You don't want to talk about Godfall? That was the big closer. What?
Yeah, right.
Come on.
I don't want to talk about Godfall, as surprising as that might be.
I don't blame the people who are making Godfall.
No.
I kind of blame, like, Sony for thinking that Godfall is a big deal. Like, closing with it. And, like, right? Like, this is the first game. Like what? I don't know what they see in Godfall that they think is... Because, like, you look at it, it's just... You know, very generic loot RPG. And, like, it gets weird because it's under all this scrutiny. And it's like, of course there's things that are funny. Of course these people are talking about their game like it's the next best thing when it's, like,
yeah,
nothing.
That's
really,
their
right?
job.
Right, that's their job. I get it. I don't understand why Sony bit on all that.
Right, it feels like someone at Gearbox Publishing has something on Sony or something like that. And they're like... Yeah, you're gonna put Godfall in the prime spot in this thing again. I don't get it. And you're right. I don't blame the people who are making Godfall. It looks fine. It looks like a better two human. I don't know. We'll see. And once that very long explanation of the gameplay started, I just tuned out. That stuff washes over me anyhow. And this is a game that, like, I'll try it when it comes out, and I'll see if I like it then. Until then, I don't need to know anything else about it. There's nothing more here that I think you can do to convince me, I don't think, based on what I know about the game. And it feels like maybe this just might be like a process of elimination thing where it might have the most assets to show. Like maybe other games are far enough behind for PS5 that, like, you know, if you want to end with a PS5 thing, then you're like, okay, Godfall's ready. Let's put it up there. And it's PS5, so people are just inherently going to be excited about it. And we know over and over again that sometimes that's true, right? Sometimes that's how it works out, where, like, a game like Red Steel launches with the Wii and sells well enough to get a Red Steel 2.
Yeah.
And then that game comes out and fizzles because by then there's enough other games to compete with it. And that, you know, there's that sort of thing has happened over and over and over again throughout the history of games. So, and maybe Godfall will be that. I think the thing this time, though, is that when people get these new systems, stuff like Fortnite's going to be there. And
right. People are going to be playing a lot of older games on these things anyway.
Absolutely. So I think Godfall's probably not going to end up being a Red Steel situation, which is, like, not even a lofty goal
I'm not quite reaching it. Yeah, it's I don't know. Like, you know, I've been wrong before. Hard to imagine a world where Godfall is a hit.
I agree. I think the two other things I would want to bring up is TimTim. TimTim's that multiplayer
Pokemon game thing. Yeah,
right. And that's, I think it's coming to everything.
Yeah, it's coming to PlayStation 5, I think Switch even, Xbox One.
Yeah.
Xbox
One. And it looks a lot like a Pokemon game. It's out now on PC in early access. You can go and play it. But this is the thing that they put, like, basically as the penultimate game right before Godfall. So it's like, I feel like Sony kind of making a big deal about this, saying, "Hey, we got, like, a Pokemon on our thing now. You don't even need Nintendo." And I wonder, like, what the thinking there was too, because it is like a multi-platform game. But maybe they have a deal or something. Who knows? Maybe Spider-Man's in there. Maybe Spider-Man's a Temtem.
Maybe Spider-Man's a Temtem. I mean, yeah, and they definitely made the deal so that they could announce it on their system first to kind of make a little confusion, ambiguity about.
Yeah, and that's, I'm sure there's value there for that sort of thing. But
right, but I mean, Temtem's weird because it's again. It seemed like there was a lot of excitement for it when it came out, and there was a lot of people when a lot of Pokemon fans seemed dissatisfied about Sword and Shield, they're like, play Temtem instead, right? And then, Sword and Shield was a giant hit, and you have not heard too much about Temtem
this year. Yeah, and I wonder if, like, Temtem will get another chance once it goes 1.0, which seems likely. Yeah. But I don't know. You're right. Like, most people are probably just going to keep playing Pokemon, and then if they want this game, they'll probably just play it on Switch if they're a Pokemon fan.
Yeah, right. That's where they are.
And then Auto Chess. What do you think about that trailer, Mike?
I missed this trailer. You had to, because you said it was something. I was writing. What happened here?
So it goes into this new trailer And all the other trailers like have like the level of polish, for lack of a better word, or just production values that you would expect from a State of Play or a Nintendo Direct or an Xbox Showcase or whatever. You know, they have great soundtracks where like the in-game action is like really cacophonous but very easy to understand. And then also there's like the sound, the music playing and stuff, you know, over that. And it all works pretty well together. It's like made by people who understand what trailers look like and sound like. And then this game comes along and it's kind of like, it's really dead. And there's just music and there's action happening on the screen, like CGI action, but it has no audio at all. It's just the music and it's very weird. And then it goes into the game and the gameplay and it's auto chess. And it is just like the auto chess. And it's just still just doing this music with no sound effects. And it's just like, okay, I get that all chess is a big deal, but if you're Sony and you're putting together a State of Play and someone sends you this trailer, I think you have to be like, okay, nice try. Try again with, you know, put a little bit more effort in the sound effects and then come back and then we'll put it in there. And like, we love to have auto chess in there. That makes sense. But because they didn't, to me, this says like, Sony just sees auto chess and is like, knows it's a big deal, knows it makes a lot of money. Yeah. And they know that they make a lot of money from stuff like Fortnite. And they're like looking on Steam and seeing how much auto chess has done there. And like, well, we got to have that here. We can't not have auto chess. And it just, I don't know. It just feels like another weird decision. I guess I'm realizing now that this whole State of Play actually does feel like a series of missteps a little bit.
What about that whole Aeon Must Die thing? Where they showed like that game, and then we found out later that their whole staff had been laid off or quit or something, and like that trailer was made with like contract assets or some assets that were stolen from those people who left, and it's like, well, that doesn't even seem like a game that's real now. Like, what was that?
Yeah, and there's a serious dispute there, and like I don't want to put all of the blame on Sony or even the publisher Focus Home Entertainment. I think that there's a chance that like this stuff had just fallen apart like in the last week, which is what it sounds like. That's how it sounds like it went down. And maybe that does take some time to understand what that stuff is. And if you're Sony, maybe you expect the publisher to vet that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, maybe. So I wouldn't be surprised if Sony had no idea about that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yes. So it's like, but still it is, when you put it all together with all these other things, it does feel like, I don't know. If sometimes these state of plays and recently, even those Nintendo Directs are feeling like, there are obligations that these companies are doing for, you know, third party partners, without anything real.
Sign this contract and we'll put you on a State of Play and whatnot.
Yeah. Right. Like it's become a bargaining chip. And I'll say that, so I made a comment yesterday about maybe Sony's mad at EA because I was expecting some EA stuff to be in this because I know that they were in discussions to be in the State of Play a long time ago. And it's probably not exactly the case. Like EA is probably not, or Sony's probably not mad at EA. I think what happened was EA, you know, like always put Madden in the Xbox thing in May and then Sony didn't love that. And then for different reasons, probably Sony pulled FIFA from the June PlayStation event because that FIFA was running on a PC. And you might remember at the time I was saying Sony's pulling some games because they want stuff running on real hardware. And that was one of the examples of that. And also like, so maybe there's some bad beef and that's why this is in here. And I think actually I kind of looked into it a little bit and it sounds like mostly EA doesn't need a State of Play to announce their games. So they're only going to go to Sony with that kind of thing if it makes a ton of sense. But like when they have like an Apex Legends trailer, which launched earlier in that day, that's something Sony actually really wants to be in the State of Play. And EA is like, well, we don't need that. We know how to speak that up to that audience really well. So we're just going to do it on our own. And the metrics tell us that if we, you know, the key performance indicators tell us that if we actually go in a State of Play, it doesn't do as well as if we were to put it on its own. So that's probably like, I think that's where the State of Play is right now, where it is speaking to an audience that all the publishers have already figured out how to speak to really well. So they don't need Sony. So Sony's not getting the stuff to like make the stuff really big unless it's their own thing. Whereas the Nintendo Directs, I think that it's the opposite, where speaking to the Nintendo audience is very difficult for a company like Electronic Arts.
Right.
So if EA wants to like put an Apex Legends trailer out, you know, a Nintendo Direct is like perfect for that to say, hey, we're coming to Switch. So it's like the Nintendo Direct is still a very different thing, it seems like, than what the State of Play can be. And it's not just that, like, oh, Sony doesn't know how to put the show together. It's that Sony is pulling from a different pile or has a different options to select from based on these companies saying, well, do we really need Sony to do this stuff? So I think the State of Play might kind of be stuck in this mode for a while until it actually builds momentum. And that might require Sony continuing to put its own stuff in there to make these things really big deals time after time. And that might be kind of infeasible for a while. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, not much else to say about the State of Play other than, I guess, were you expecting, I know they said not to expect anything PS5, but like,
were you expecting
price or anything? Yeah.
Nah, I wasn't expecting anything really.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. I mean, prices have got to come soon for either of those boxes, though, right? Like, we're running out of time.
Yeah, you would think this month at some point, right? I mean, like, pre-orders have to start happening, supposedly. Like, I mean, gosh, it seems like last generation, the generation before that, it was all about pre-orders. Like, that's all they couldn't mention the consoles without saying the word pre-order 5 times. So,
right.
I mean, I know things have changed a bit, but I imagine pre-orders are still important, and they still want to get those going, so... Gotta happen.
Yeah, I think you're like, you know, the timeline here now is based on giving retailers and, you know, retail partners enough time to make pre-order or to order the systems, and they need to do pre-orders to make those orders so they know what to expect. But I guess there is that small possibility. I think Matt Piscatella actually brought this up on Twitter, Matt Piscatella of the MPD, that maybe Sony could do like this first wave of pre-orders just through their own site and not with like a partner like GameStop. And would that be, you know, they did start their own online store specifically to sell PlayStation hardware. And if they did that, they wouldn't need to announce a price for quite some time still, because they could take pre-orders kind of last minute, because they're the ones that know how to fill those things.
That was still pretty nuts.
Doubt it.
Yeah, that seems a little.
I doubt it. I mean,
maybe, but that seems crazy.
Right. I know times have changed. It's been a long time since 2013, but GameStop GameStop was the by far the number one place for hardware sales. You know, compared to other retail stores and online.
Yeah, people were still
PlayStation, Xbox One
launches. Yeah. Go get your console and all that stuff. Like, and even I remember even then, I was like, it started feeling like this isn't what it used to be, and now it's almost like who's gonna do that?
Right, but yeah, but. Still, I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a large percentage of people, maybe not the majority like it was in 2013, right, but a large percentage of people are still going to think of new hardware that I go to GameStop to buy that. And we'll see. But I think a lot of those people know that they have alternatives now. But
right.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, let's get on to some other news. Nintendo has sold 61.44 million Nintendo Switch systems. That basically pulls it even with the NES, and by now, like, it was like 50,000 behind, maybe 500,000 behind the Nintendo the NES when these numbers came out. By now, it's probably surpassed that because it's continuing to sell really well. So it's essentially only behind the Wii in terms of the best selling Nintendo hardware of all time. I think it's probably important to mention, like, in the past, Nintendo had a handheld and a home console, and so those sales have sort of been combined, and that's clearly helping here. But also, clearly, the Nintendo Switch is a success. So,
yeah,
it's doing real well. You know, pandemic is helping there, but it was selling even well before that. Another big part of this all came out of Nintendo's financials, where they revealed that Animal Crossing New Horizons has surpassed 22 million copies sold, which is just a bananas number.
It's insane.
Like, so much.
I mean, it's already surpassed Smash Brothers. Like, Smash Brothers was like at 19.99 million. So it's also probably there now. But
it's like,
I would not have thought
the actual Final Fantasy VII Remake, right? Like,
oh, if Final Fantasy VII Remake is like at 5 million recently, right?
Right.
That perspective. Like, it's insane. And I mean, just when you look at the list, like, Nintendo has all these games that are either at 20 million or going to be at 20 million. Like, they're going to have like 5 games. Or more on this system that are going to sell over 20 million copies. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's baffling. Like, it's like, you know, you grow up thinking, like, I grew up thinking that the industry was one way, where a game like Final Fantasy VII in 1997 or whatever it was, is like the biggest moment ever. And this is like, this is what gaming is. This is what people want. And then, you know, you fast forward 23 years and it's like, people want a variety of things. And there's a lot of people out there that just want a game that isn't punishing. It doesn't, it's a chill thing. There's no like real fail condition. It's a game where you just can explore and express yourself. And that's the kind of thing that can sell 22 million copies in a couple of months. Again, the pandemic is fueling this stuff. It's giving, it's helping people funnel money towards gaming instead of other things that aren't available. But still, a lot of this just comes from this game being exactly what people want to be playing. I don't know. It's still hard to wrap my mind around.
Right. The other crazy thing is like the attach rates, right? Like, cause again, like something like 60 right. million ish. It's like a third of the people who have Switch, like have games like Mario Kart, Smash Brothers and Animal Crossing. And like, yeah. I think and Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey are like 18 million ish or something. They're like not that far behind. It's insane.
Yeah. And I wonder like what Nintendo, like how this changes Nintendo and like, I guess not changes, but I wonder if like how this informs like what games they make going forward. Cause I know like during the DS time when DS started doing really well with that Blue Ocean crowd, you know, they did I can't remember what they called it. But like the DS generation or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was about like fine, like making games for older people and for women.
It was basically Wii Sports was a hit. And here's the response to that. Right. So like, are we going to see a lot more of these like kind of chill, like not necessarily like simple games, because Animal Crossing like isn't necessarily simple. But right. Yeah, like, how are they going to capitalize on that? And there's got to be something, right? So they're going to be like, oh, Animal Crossing is the only thing that's going to target this audience. That doesn't seem
right.
When multiplayer was a big thing on Nintendo 64, we saw like, you know, all of a sudden there's Mario Party and Smash Brothers, right? Like they'll chase those trends.
Yeah, and they should, and I think it could be a good thing for them. Like I think they could really, amplify this audience that they are sort of creating by themselves, an audience of people who want to play on a dedicated gaming machine, not their phones, but also don't necessarily want. And I'm not picking on it, but don't want Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Right. Final Fantasy VII Remake is selling very well still. But
yes, exactly. That's not what I'm trying to do.
Astronomical, like. Like this,
right.
I was kind of interested in looking at like the sales numbers, seeing the games that like again are selling okay. And it's funny because like I'm like looking at Super Mario Maker 2, I'm like, oh, only 5 million. But again, now like compared to like Final Fantasy 7, that sounds good. But it's like, man, why isn't Super Mario Maker 2 like one of these 10 million games? I don't know. You know what was really low and almost kind of made me feel good because I'm very hard on it was the Yoshi's Crafted World was like just above 1 million. I'm like, maybe they'll pick up on that a bit. I don't know.
I bought that game, I think when it was on sale for like $40. And I've tried to start it a couple times. And it's like, man, Mike was right. It's just sort of...
It's boring. It's a boring baby
boring
game.
Yeah. It's a shame. And they don't need it because they have... Because Kirby's explicitly... And we don't need to... We've talked about this before. We don't need to really litigate it.
But Kirby Star Allies has sold 2.56 million. And Yoshi's Crafted World sold 1.11 million. And like, even this Kirby game wasn't like a very good Kirby game this time, but it was still better than Yoshi's Crafted World. So yeah, Yoshi's Crafted World sold just a little bit better than Astral Chain, which sold 1.08 million. I feel like for a game with Yoshi in the title, that's not good. Treasure Tracker on the Switch has sold a little bit better than Yoshi's Crafted World at 1.18 million. So yeah,
that's it. The rest of the episode is just let's find shit that sold better than that stupid Yoshi game.
I hate that Yoshi game. That Yoshi game was bull.
I'm sorry. That because Yoshi's Island's so good, and it's like it's like an all time classic game, and then everything since then has been just been disappointing.
I can get off that train because I know I yell.
Lot. We have other things to be angry about later in the episode. Yeah.
Pokemon Sword Show is the other one that's like almost at 20 million. So there's going to be six games. Like by the next time they do this, or within a year, there's going to be six games on the Switch that have sold more than 20 million copies.
Have they repackaged Pokemon with the DLC yet?
No, I don't think so. And that'll boost it, right? Like
that'll boost it a lot. Yeah,
that'll boost it easily. But
okay,
man, nuts.
All right, so more Nintendo news. They confirmed Pikmin 3 Deluxe finally. And it's coming out October 30th. Mm-hmm. And Let's talk about the weird thing. You know, not weird. It's a bad thing. They delisted the Wii U version right after doing this. They also waited until the voucher thing expired by like 5 days. Where if like last year they did this thing where you could pay $100 and get two vouchers that you could redeem for games, and those games could be $60 each. So essentially, you were saving $20. And it was a good program. And they waited until those vouchers expired, which I actually don't know if that's legal, but. I'm pretty sure that's illegal in the United States, but whatever. That's for them to fight off, whatever. Kind of Nintendo being shitty. This is bad stuff. Also, like, if you wanted to buy Pikmin 3 on Wii U up to this point, why didn't you? I mean, you could.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with that, right? Like, that is a little shitty, but it's also like, I can't imagine that's actually affecting that many people.
I can only get so mad about it, right? Like, right, it was like the same thing with the, this was something we didn't put in the news, but the same thing with the Spider-Man thing on PS4.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I can only get so mad about this. Know. I'll make jokes about it.
Yeah, it's a little shitty, but like, you know.
And it's like they waited till after they started taking pre-orders to do it. Yeah, okay, I get it. I think you could probably get your money back probably from Xbox or whoever if it's that big a deal. And I'm not saying it's good, and I'm not defending Sony. I just can't get my hackles up.
With everything going on, I'm like, that's not
right.
That's
and like, but there are things like the DualShock 4 not working on with PlayStation 5 games. That I'm like, that's frustrating to me, and I actually do think that's just a bad move.
That's one where I still feel like Spider-Man on that. I can only get so mad. I understand.
And everyone's gonna have their own different things on this. And I get that most people, you know. The PlayStation 5 comes with DualShock or DualSense, and that's all they're going to need.
Yeah, that'd be. And I live alone. Like, I'm not playing very many multiplayer games.
Right, and it's like my kids are getting to the age where the next consoles I buy, they're going to start playing those a lot more. And it's like, man, I have a lot of Xbox controllers and a lot of DualSense or DualShock 4 controllers laying around, and it would be nice to just let little kids use those for years and years until they're able to take care of stuff. That's where my thinking comes from.
Yeah, it's funny seeing when my brother's house just how many like Switch controllers he has now for the kids, like kind of like cheap, not cheapish, but you know, like not like the pros, but like those that just like each kid has their own Switch controller because they need to or else they'll fight, and you know.
Right. I've invested a lot and I've gotten a lot of controllers over the years. And it's like, I really like the idea of being able to just continue to use my controllers. And, you know, someone brought up, it's like, you can use the DualShock 4 to play xCloud games. So you'll be able to play next gen xCloud Xbox games with DualShock 4, over the cloud.
I certainly don't think there's like, obviously, the reason for it is that they want you to buy new controllers. Like, that's it.
Yes, which like, are very like, high-margin things to make a lot of money, yes. Right. And we've seen this over the last year.
Right, like, we want people to use the new features on the DualSense. And even I, who like the DualSense, like, what does the DualSense do?
We know this, yes.
DualShock 4 doesn't do, I forget. Is that a thing?
HD Rumble. It does HD Rumble, and it's got, like, the resistive adaptive triggers, and none of those things are inputs.
How important can that be for when you're trying to play Mortal Kombat 12 with your friend, right?
Like, right. It's not going to, like, we know this. We've seen it over and over and over. Developers aren't using HD Rumble. They're just not going to support the most of this stuff. At least not like in a way that justifies not supporting a controller. But I get that not everyone feels the same way as me, and I think that's fine. I just think it's stupid. All right, let's keep going on with the news. You know, Sony also had their financials also did very well. I think their digital sales were up. They just skyrocketed like 150% or something like that. The PS4 has surpassed 112 million units sold. It's, I think that's puts it like the second best selling console of all time. I think home console.
Yeah. Like it's not like PlayStation 2 is so far ahead. That's 155-ish. Okay. Yeah. Something like that. So it's not going to catch that. It's
unreachable because, there's not going to be a years and years of the PS4 selling for $99.
Right.
That audience has gone away. Yeah.
Right. PlayStation 2 kept selling because, the cheap PlayStation 2, there's still good games coming out for it pretty relatively late in its cycle. Although, late in its cycle for PlayStation 2, like after PlayStation 3 launch, is still like where we are now with the PlayStation 4.
Yes. A very different time. Yep.
Right. Yeah. Also, 155 million PlayStation 2s is part of the reason why GameCube only sold 20 million something, and that was the whole thing on Twitter for me. Which started because of that people talking about like the best-selling Nintendo consoles, and it's like I've seen it before, but it still gets me so sad when you look at it. It's like, you know, the Wii U sold really bad, and it's like everyone knows that. But like the GameCube did not sell that much better. To me, I'm like, yeah, how did the GameCube do that badly? Because that's, man, like that wasn't a system that like died early. It had a normal life cycle. It had games coming out for all time. Had some of the best games ever on it, and like, man. Everyone just played PlayStation 2 and said, I understand the PlayStation 2 was great, but.
Yeah, I think it was the market was smaller then. And
yes, that's for sure.
But that's what makes
the PlayStation 2 selling 155 million still absolutely crazy.
Right. And that, I mean, that's what I think the PlayStation 2 proved, that like there's a lot more people out there that want to play games than we realized. And they're everywhere. Like the PlayStation 2 was a global smash hit in a way that no system before ever had been, really.
And it had probably the biggest monopoly on a generation that we've seen since like the NES.
Yeah. And you know, it just hit it was like the Fortnite of consoles and like how popular it was in popular culture.
I think Nintendo was at that strange point too, where like people like me and you who grew up on Nintendo were now kind of angsty teenagers. And like you actually did like legitimately hear people saying like, oh, Nintendo's not cool. Nintendo's kiddie.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people who were playing video games, like, actually did believe that. And now we're at that point where like Nintendo is so classic that it's getting theme parks and stuff, and like Mario is much more of like a Mickey thing, where it's like you don't get too old for Mickey, right? It's, you know, it's right. Fine. So
and I know I absolutely felt that. I mean, I was a Nintendo fanboy still at that point. I was like, I was definitely like growing out of it at that period, but I was still at that point where I was like, I play Nintendo games, and I had a ton of anxiety about like Nintendo does need to do more mature stuff. I'm like, you know, Nintendo's not kiddie. I think all this stuff is timeless. I know this stuff is timeless, but they should be doing more stuff that is edgy. And I was very excited for Resident Evil 4 and for Eternal Darkness. And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Good games. I've definitely like turned around on that so much since then. It's like, no, they don't need to be anything else except for what they are. They totally get what they are. My kids see Mario and they instantly recognize this, like, you know, just instinctively that like, oh, this is an appealing character that I want to play with. And they, I get that Lego Mario thing, which I forgot I ordered and showed up and we set it up, and they both have just been playing with it just like nonstop. I couldn't believe it. Like, I thought it would be like they wouldn't really get it or care. And then, no, they're like making Mario go through the course. My baby's 18 months old doing that. It's like wild. Awesome. So yeah. And it's like, man,
great.
Yeah, I got one. It's just like, oh, there's something with Mario that is actually just, we get it on a genetic level. You're right, but it took us time to realize that. And the GameCube is very much at a point where it's like, PlayStation 2 is cool with like
Grand Theft Auto
rappers.
It's the Grand Theft Auto generation.
Yeah, exactly. And if you had Grand Theft Auto 3, and that was, you're right, that's exactly what it was. And that's what people wanted, and it brought in a ton of people and a ton of money. But none of this justifies people today saying GameCube was bad.
I got so mad. I was just like, because I mentioned, I'm like, man, it's just crazy to me the GameCube didn't sell well. And people are like, that's because it was bad. That's because it was shitty. It didn't have good games. It looked like a
Xbox. And then they like, give a list. Like,
wow. Wow. You
know, they give a list of like the top 25 games. They're like, look, this is Chris Plant from Polygon saying that, like, oh, Prince of Persia Sands of Time in the top five. That means it's a bad console. First of all, that game deserves to be in the top five of any of those systems. Second of all, like all the other games around it were like Metroid Prime and Wind Waker,
and Smash Bros. Melee.
Resident Evil 4.
Right.
Yeah. This is like an unbelievably good console.
I was
doubting it for a second. And then I looked at that list. I'm like, oh my God. All of these games are classics.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean,
there's a reason, like, Dolphin is the emulator everyone talks about these days. And GameCube games sell for so much on eBay. That is, like, in a way that, like, yeah, there's a lot of PlayStation 2 games, and so, like, it's easy to like, go find that stuff. But people have a nostalgia for GameCube in a way that they don't even for PlayStation 2, I think. I'm trying to think, is that true? But I think it is true. I think that there's just a level of nostalgia that surpasses even that dominating console. No, it was a good console.
It was a great console.
It played all the third-party games better than the PlayStation 2.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, Resident Evil 2 eventually came to PlayStation 2. Okay, great. It was worse there. Like, Soul Calibur 2, you definitely wanted on that. Prince of Persia was on PlayStation 2. You didn't want to play that on there.
No way. Yeah, and like, yeah, you could play it on Xbox, and it did look even better there for sure, but you know, Xbox had its own dearth of interesting stuff beyond Halo. Yeah, GameCube was good.
GameCube was great. Again, that's all I was trying to say. Is like, man, I feel like for a system that had, again, you look at that list, like so many absolute classics, it should have sold more than 20 million something copies. That's right. Like, that's just, it's crazy to me.
Well, look at this stupid list.
Are you looking at it? What, the best selling?
Yeah,
games?
I just want to. Yeah. You know, just like the game, the games radar, like best GameCube games, things that he linked to. And it's like he brings up Prince of Persia in the top five, and then yeah, the other four games were Smash Brothers, Resident Evil 4, Metroid Prime, and Wind Waker.
Also,
like, come on.
I'm like, I get tired of people being like, Mario Sunshine is not good. Mario Sunshine is still great. It's still better than every other 3D platformer besides like the better Mario ones.
You're right.
To me.
You're right. You know? Yeah. Like, yes, you're right. It's like there's not even another 3D platform on PlayStation 2 or even like PlayStation right. 3 that almost comes close.
Maybe
like,
maybe Ratchet and Clank like 2.
Right.
I'll say, but yes. Like I just played Jak and Daxter. I love Jak and Daxter. Not close to Sunshine still. Not even close.
Yep.
Like, I'm sorry.
And then there's F-Zero GX, Animal Crossing.
Yeah, Animal Crossing started there. Like
the Rogue Leader games, Star right. Wars Rogue Leader games.
And yeah. Don't forget Thousand Year Door, the last good Thousand. Mario game. Yep. Weird stuff like Bat Kato's. Beautiful Joe was there. That was a Beautiful Joe.
Yeah, and then like GameCube. Dreamcast ports that like aren't worth complaining about. Chris Plant.
Skies
of Arcadia Legends and Ikaruga. These are good things.
Okay. Damn it. But yes, I resent the fact that I have to defend the GameCube.
I know, yes. Super Monkey Ball, like
that was great.
It's fantastic.
Super yes. fun. One of the best launch games ever. Love Super
Monkey Ball. Yes.
Super Monkey Ball 2 is even better, but.
There was a Super Monkey Ball game launching on these new consoles. People would be going nuts. People would be so excited. Ugh. All right. We got that out of our system. All right. A little bit more news. Fall Guys launched. Very successful. Yeah, you might be having troubles getting into that game. And the reason for that is it had 1.5 million players in its first 24 hours, which is a ton.
It's a ton. Not sold, though, because at least amount of those are PlayStation Plus subscribers, right?
Yes. Right. And you have that game going forward as long as you're a PlayStation Plus subscriber, just like with Rocket League. And I'm sure it was a good deal for them because, you know, getting this game out there in a lot of people's hands ensures that it has this buzz that it does have. But yeah, I mean, it's an unqualified success, this game, without a doubt. Like, it is just a huge success. We'll talk about it more in what we've been playing because we have both been spending time with that
even
game.
Together.
Yeah, we played a few rounds together. It was fun. All right, Xbox Game Pass is, or not Xbox Game Pass, what is it? Xbox xCloud.
Cloud. Project launching xCloud. Xbox yes, Series September 15th. Project xCloud.
100 games as part of the Game Pass Ultimate subscription on September 15th. It's not going to work on iOS, Mike.
No, it's not.
And it's like, people are like, well, I want to work on iOS. And like, yes, pay attention. Apple just doesn't want competition and they've blocked Stadia. I don't think they let PlayStation Now on there. It's just Apple is controlling this whole thing. Cause I think they might one day want to get into the business of streaming games. So why would you let a competitor get a foothold?
They don't know what those games right? are. Every time anybody says, think about the children, they not think about the children. Unless it's think about the money. Which has the mindset of a terrified first time mother of like a 2-year-old. Nintendo is actually horrified of what might happen to children. Everybody else is sincere.
Only Nintendo's fretting is legitimate fretting.
Yeah.
Everyone else is just counting their money. Yeah. And like to a like a detrimental level with Nintendo. It's not like this is a good thing that they have friend code.
I mean, I guess I kind of admire the sincerity, but like
right. It's like, oh, you're trying. Okay. Yeah. Good for you.
It's you don't get the internet.
It's a very scary place.
It's certainly better than Apple manipulating the market to its own favor, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. Which is exactly what's happening here. We don't need to say much else than that. I forget that there's like Apple and Android fanboys out there. If you're an Apple fanboy and you're like, how dare you say that Apple's doing this thing that it's very clearly and obviously doing, I don't know what to say to you. They just don't want competition in case they get into this business someday. It's you know, this is a subscription that is really, when you get down to it, no different than Netflix, which is available on iOS. And
yeah, it's not like
Apple's got to get paid, right?
Like Apple goes through like every single movie on Netflix and make sure that come on.
This is part of this is just like Apple's long term like distrust of gaming, where it's like it does treat gaming differently. Yeah, yeah. Like they like, yeah, like they would like, oh, we're going to, you know, ban certain games because of content, but we would never do that to books or movies. And it's like, what the fuck? What's the difference here? But yeah. And it's like, okay, if we talk about,
because Apple, video games are paid, toys for children, Jeff.
Yeah. I mean, clearly that's how they feel.
That's how I have a friend. I have a friend, like an old high school friend I talked to all the time still. And he's a classics teacher. And he likes to mock me by that. Oh, no. Video games are toys for children. It's his favorite line. Oh, but, and sometimes I can't.
Stories are entertainment. Oh, yeah. Never mind. I don't need to fight this person. I don't even know Mike.
You should fight him. Fist fight him. It's good.
Yeah. I should just fist fight people and get this stuff. Well, GameCube is good. And I will meet you in the parking lot of Kroger.
That's going to be what I say the first time. Right before I punch a person in the face for the first time in my life, I'm going to scream, GameCube is good. Pow.
Sold me with the rage of Nintendo.
Take that, Chris Pan. Oh no, he's gonna be like police, like when Naughty is starting to beat
me up. Yeah, you're just gonna go to jail now.
Yeah, I think anybody could take me in a fight. That wouldn't be too
good. yeah, basically, if Apple wants to get paid, like the same way it works with Netflix, like you subscribe to Netflix on your iPhone, then Apple gets 30% of everything you pay each month for that. So it could just work the same way with Game Pass. But they clearly just want to get into this business and take it for themselves.
It's funny how all the people I know who like are, you know, use iPhones, like they're not like buying these like cheap Android phones just to basically be their like they're like game streaming like screen, basically. That's it.
And you know, I haven't responded to them on Twitter. A developer was saying, well, Android's like 75% of the global market, and okay, yes, that is true, but it not
75%
by money
big still,
and not by money spent. And the reason for that is like Android phones often come cheaper, and they are more available in emerging markets. And when Apple's just is better at getting people to tie their credit cards to stuff ever since iTunes. People had iTunes, they had credit cards attached to theirs to buy music, and then all those people bought iPhones. And they never stopped having their credit cards attached to stuff.
I feel seen right now.
And so they're taking advantage of that, just like it's their right. That's fine. But and the purchasing power is so outsized that Apple still is going to control this stuff going forward. And if you don't work on iPhone, most people are just going to assume, even if it's not most people, that are the kind of people that are going to be playing games, honestly, on their phone. They're going to assume that like just this technology just doesn't even exist until Apple does it. And then once Apple does it, Apple could just take it over overnight. And yeah. We'll see how that plays out, but it just feels like iOS is going to continue not playing ball and other companies are just going to have to deal with it. And I think there's a risk of like antitrust stuff happening in Europe, not in the United States, but I think they're willing to just pay fines and deal with it. Cause the eventual windfall of money that could come if this whole thing works, where there's 2 billion gamers in the world, which, you know, we can argue that separately. If that whole thing works, there's a lot of money to be made, and it's going to be worth it in the end to pay a few fines that are, you know, what, $5 billion at most. Okay. Last story. Trump is blocking transactions with Tencent.
Who knows what that means?
It doesn't mean anything yet. That's the thing, right?
Right. It probably doesn't mean anything. I mean, again, this is entering like a whole realm where I'm kind of out of my depth of like, you know, politics and worldwide trade and markets. So, you know, with how complex those things are and how crazy Trump can be, this could mean absolutely nothing, or maybe it does mean something eventually. I don't know. And I almost hate to say it because I know like sometimes we can almost let people get away with stuff with this attitude, but like my instinct here is that this is probably not actually going to be something that impacts like somebody from buying V-Bucks on Fortnite.
Right. So, okay, yeah. So the basic details here are that I think someone might have said something mean about Trump on WeChat, which is a Chinese messaging service, and Trump didn't like that, and that's owned by a Chinese company called Tencent. And so Trump made a declaration that people in the United States or any, you know, jurisdiction controlled by the United States are not allowed to do transactions with Tencent because of this.
Now, I'm sure that when he decided this, I don't think Trump has any idea about how much, Tencent's fingers are in so many American companies and all that stuff.
No chance in hell. He doesn't even know what he was. Yeah, he just said, someone write a thing that makes this thing stop. Yeah, but as part of this declaration, this executive order, I think, it said that the Secretary of Commerce will decide the details beginning in 45 days from now or whatever. And this was yesterday. So already it's like nebulous because the details are yet to be decided. But I guess today, I think, I can't remember who it was, might have been Business Insider or something, contacted the Secretary of Commerce and said, wait, what the hell does this mean? You know how big Tencent is, how much they've invested in worldwide gaming companies and all kinds of other stuff. But a lot of gaming companies based in the United States, like Epic Games, the makers of Fortnite, the makers of the Unreal Engine, which is in a ton of games across a bunch of companies. It's like that Tommy Westfall theory from St. Elsewhere, where it's like every person is a part of this imaginary universe. If you don't know it, don't worry about it. Just
I don't. Tommy Westfall. I was nodding like I did.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I could tell. I gave up. I'm like, I'm you know, abandoned ship here. Unreal powers a ton of games across the industry. So it's like, is that going to be okay? So it turns out probably not. The Secretary of Commerce said this is going to be related directly to WeChat and only WeChat. So everyone could breathe a sigh of relief. I think even if it hadn't, even if he didn't say that, even if it was like, oh no, we're going to go after Tencent, this stuff's going to fizzle out because the president has a, you know, the attention span of a very tiny, like, tadpole.
It seems like one of the things he does just because it plays to his base that he looks like he's being tough on China. He's
right. Yeah. And that's all that matters. Yeah. Right? Right. It only matters that it appears that way. It doesn't matter. The fall through doesn't matter. And he was absolutely going to lose interest in this and it was going to go away.
I want to know what Trump thinks about the GameCube.
Yeah, God damn it. He probably thinks it's bad too.
He does. Maybe that'll shame all the other people who think it's bad though.
Yeah, exactly. Well done. All right. I think that does it for news. That was a beefy news segment. I was not expecting that. Yeah. All right. So let's talk about some games then, Mike. Let's start with Fall Guys since we were mentioning it there. I think this game is very fun.
It's super fun. I am having a great time with it. I was surprised how much more fun it was playing with you.
Yes.
As people in general, but like just, you know, watching each other. We even had we were in our Discord. We even had some other friends watching and just kind of bantering and freaking out and giggling. And, you know, I like some of the complaints people have about the game with, like, you know, like the team things are unfair, blah, blah. It's like, I understand it to a point, but it's almost kind of missing the point. Like, yes, it's nice to win in advance, but this is basically a giant goofball of a game, right?
Right.
Just running around, you're scrambling. Like, you know, some people are complaining about the physics. Like, why am I tripping so much longer than other people? It's like, because it's silly, you know? Like, you're going to win eventually.
The soccer game.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I was playing the soccer game. It's a team game, but I was solo queuing, so I was by myself with no one else to talk to about it. And I was defending the goal, and I went to jump up, and I did a perfect header right through the middle of the ball, and my character goes right through the ball. And I've clearly desynced from the server, and where I'm going, the ball is no longer there, but the game is telling me it's there because it's a little broken. Okay, very frustrating, absolutely, but it's like also really low stakes because you are still, it's still that battle royale thing where you're going up against 59 other people. It's 60 players and chances are you're not going to win.
Yeah.
So like you go in expecting not to win. So you lost. So big deal. Just start again, go again. It's whatever. And bad luck is going to happen, but that is a great equalizer to the point where it's like everyone feels like they have a chance to win because anyone could have bad luck. And that means you could have good luck and stay ahead of someone who is objectively better at you than video games in a way that can't really happen, even though it does happen a little bit with like Fortnite.
But less likely happen for it because clicking on heads is still very important, right? And that takes a lot of skill. And here, you know, the platforming and other things, you know, that stuff is important. But yeah, it's less so.
No, that could be a double-edged sword or double-edged blade, whatever the term is, where... Oh, you know, people get burnt out because they're like, well, it's just luck, right? So whatever. But I think you're right that playing with friends completely removed the frustration for me because it was like, chances are one of us is going to get through.
Then I'll just watch you.
Then I get to watch and like root and like get to see what, like I get to yell at you for what you're doing wrong or whatever. And it's like, and it's just a fun way to spend time with friends in a very similar way.
I mean, the most fun I maybe had was that ridiculous, I think you posted this clip where I lost in the first round because I was just really blowing it for some reason. And it was just hilarious to me.
Very last place. And it was, it was so funny. And it's like, I don't remember how that whole thing ended. I don't remember what round I lost in. I know I didn't win. But nothing beyond that, like that's, you know, it was whatever. But that moment right there where you lost, I got to watch it and I was going across the finish line and then it said eliminated as you're tumbling down. I remember all that stuff vividly. And those kinds of moments are going to be the kind of thing that this thing lives on and thrives on for, I think, probably for a really long time.
I hope so.
How do you think they're going to have to support it with a ton of new content? Can it be kind of like a regular trickle?
The best way to keep it fresh is to constantly kind of rotate in a few new of the mini games, maybe rotate a few of them out. Like, that's going to be more important than cosmetics. The cosmetics would be nice.
Right.
But that's the big thing. It's just kind of, making it so that every once in a while. And I feel like trickle might even be better than big updates. I think I might, like, a big update here and there will be good. But, you know, I hope almost like once every couple of weeks, it's like, oh, look, I haven't played this one before. They must have added this in. Okay.
Right. Neat.
So, it's going to take a lot of work.
And knowing that a lot of people have it, like it's on PlayStation Plus, but it's also selling really well on Steam.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing where it's like, what are we going to play tonight? What is anyone in the mood for? Well, let's just play a couple of rounds of Fall Guys and then we'll see where we go from there. It's like that kind of game where it'll fill in a lot of gaps for a lot of groups of friends, which is, I think I bring this up in a lot of stories I write, like that whole idea of like friends playing together online and having like discords that they go to every night to see what everyone is playing is like more and more important every single day. It like grew in importance in 2017 with Fortnite and PUBG and everything. And it's just getting more and more important.
Especially.
And any game that sort of like fits into that model is just going to do really well.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's almost like, I feel like that's why games like Killing Edge that had such a big like PlayStation component to it are at a disadvantage, right? Like PlayStation Network is just not a substitute for Discord right now in terms of connecting with your friends anymore. Like that, it just doesn't have the features that we're used to now. Like doing what Xbox Live did in 2006 is not cutting it anymore.
Right. And it's like even like the little bit that Xbox does where it's like you could see what people are playing on Xbox on Discord, that like that helps a little bit. Like it's just a little nudge where it's like, okay, at least I kind of understand like what they're into tonight and I can say, hey, maybe I could join you or maybe come join us. But it's not it's still not a full substitute.
I mean, gosh, I do not play, especially even before crossplay was becoming a thing. And thank God crossplay did become a thing because I do not play online multiplayer games on my consoles. I just don't anymore. Yep. That's just
same here.
I just don't bother with that. I just know I'm happier doing that on my PC. And a large part of it is ever since Discord was a thing. I just know that that's way easier for talking to people.
Yep. It's like one of the things where it surprised me, like the Discord store didn't work because it's like you just think that that's a model that fits in really well. But no, it really is just about communication and serving up a way for people to connect. And anything that helps that is going to be what Discord should be focusing on. And they realize that. But yeah, Fall Guys. A really good game, a huge success and deserved. It's still having networking issues. I saw today a bunch of people complaining about matchmaking being down.
Yeah.
That's just going to be an issue, I think.
It's a relatively small team with giant, massive players coming in. So, like, there's not too much they can do about that. Like, they're putting in fixes and stuff, I'm sure, all the time. But, like, there's going to be problems. I mean, Blizzard has problems when the new game launch.
How do you feel about the idea of, like, it's kind of it seems almost a little bit unfair to talk about that a lot in your user review or whatever, because it's not going to last. I don't know.
I mean, it's legitimate. It is a thing that happened to you.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I feel like
if you don't, you know, some people get, if you, like, I have understanding for that. If you don't and you feel a need to complain about it, I mean, I guess you can. I've got a choose to, like, not care about it too much personally. I mean, I'm okay with user reviews. I don't like this aggregation of them, like, being prominent and being like, this is what most people think about it, and this is what you should
do.
That's the issue. Like, if people want to go and shit-talk a game on user reviews, like, you know, whatever. But I hate that it actually matters, I suppose, in more ways than it should.
Right. And I think my thing is, like, it doesn't seem that helpful because the way people find out that a game is down is through social media and through news stories. And And that's like a way better way to keep track of if is the game having troubles right now. And it's like if you go to user reviews to see anything, which people do, and they mostly do that aggregated version, and they see that it's like, oh, it's kind of a mixed game. And most of that's because people were frustrated with it being down. And now that's no longer the case. It's just not helpful. But that's not that's not the user doing the reviews fault. It is the fault of their aggregation.
But then, like, you know, even then, like now the user reviews are going down. So then the developer is kind of like, oh, everyone's mean to us. Please be nice to us instead. And then they are. So now it's back up. I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean now? Like, you know, like there's so many meta level things happening with the user reviews.
Right.
That don't seem to have too much to do with the game. So I don't know.
Yep. It's frustrating. What else you been spending time with?
I was playing a lot more CrossCode, and like I was having fun, but like I just got weirded out by the pacing a bit. Like, because you know, I compare it to Zelda a lot, right? That there are dungeons. You know, in Zelda games, there's always like the things you do in between the dungeons, and that was true for this game. Like before that first dungeon, you've seen you do a lot of stuff. Then there's a lot of stuff in between that and the second dungeon. After the second dungeon, there was like a ton of extra stuff, and then I did some more things. Then I got to the third dungeon. And then literally right after that, you do the fourth dungeon. I was like, that's weird. And then right after that, you do a small side quest, and then you do the fifth dungeon. And I walked inside the fifth dungeon. And again, these dungeons are very long. They're longer than Zelda dungeons. I walked inside that fifth dungeon. I was like, I'm tired. Like, I need to just play something else for a bit. So that's what I've done. Actually, I forgot to even put this on here, but I was playing Mighty Gunvolt Burst first, which is... it's basic. It's another Inti Creates game. It's remember when Mighty No. 9 came out and Inti Creates, like, they made like the retro version of Mighty No. 9 first?
Was right,
like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is the sequel to that makes it more of an actually fleshed out game. It's funny because like the bosses are just the bosses from Mighty No. 9, and you can play as Mighty No. 9. I'm like, this should have just been Mighty No. 9. This is way better.
Right.
Right. No, it's not like amazing. Like I wouldn't compare it to like the best Mega Man games or something like that. But it was pretty fun. So I killed some time with that. Then I just last night, instead of going back to CrossCode, I started A Hat in Time finally on Switch, which is like that indie 3D platformer. Which I love the idea that like we can have indie 3D platformers now, because like I love indie 2D yes. platformers. So I just started it. It's really fun. It doesn't run great on the Switch. I almost kind of wish I just got this on a more like high fidelity system, just because it's hard to make out some details. Like I feel like a higher frame rate would benefit this kind of a game, just stuff like that. But it seems fun. I tell you what's weird is what I have not gone back to in a very long time since I stopped playing it so that I could review Ghost of Tsushima weeks ago is The Last of Us Part II. Like, I figure...
Okay. What's happening there? Like, is it just the hump to get back into it?
I guess, yeah. It's like, you know, I thought, like, when I stopped playing, it was, like, right at the start of a new chapter. I was, like, 10 hours in already. And I was like, okay, I'll stop here because I know I need to start playing Ghost of Tsushima now. And I did, and I liked that game. And then after that, I'm like, then I was on vacation. I was like, I don't want to play Last of Us Part 2 right now. That doesn't seem, like, fun or relaxing. And then now it's, like, even a week or so after that, and I still just... I don't know. I think part of it is just because I know, like, to me, I feel like I've made pretty good progress in that kind of a game, 10 hours, and I know that it's still much, much longer.
Yeah.
I'm just tired, and I don't know. I think I need to just get over myself. Like, I know if I start it up again, I'll probably start doing myself and be fine, but, like, I haven't had enough motivation yet to get that push. So, like, obviously, it's telling me that, like, again, and I've talked about Last of Us Part II. I like Last of Us Part II. I'm pretty comfortable saying that I do not love The Last of Us Part II right now. Like, it might be my least favorite Naughty Dog game in a while.
I think you are, I think a lot of people felt that way. I think when I sort of like took the temperature of all the stuff I had heard from other people, and I only played it for a few hours. So I think I got into day two or something like that. I don't know. Maybe day three. But from what I heard from most people, it was that, they liked it. It was a well-made game. They just didn't love it. And they didn't, I think a lot of that came down to the story beats, I think was the issue. I think mostly, maybe some repetitive gameplay later on. Yeah. I don't know.
I could see that happening. Cause already it's like, okay, every encounter here is kind of doing the same thing. And if it's 30 hours of that, right? Like, that's why it's so hard for these kind of games to be that long, right? Because at least if you're like a Final Fantasy VII or a Skyrim or something, because they're RPGs, you're constantly, you know, getting new stuff or getting stronger, right? There's so many more carrots on the stick there. And there's like some progression stuff here with like, you know, getting crafting recipes and like improving your guns a bit, but like not a ton of that. So
it's mostly a roller coaster, right? And like a 30-hour roller coaster turns into kind of a nightmare.
Right. That's the thing. Like even, you know, Uncharted, right? Like if an Uncharted game, you know, how much I love Uncharted. If an Uncharted game was like 30 hours long, I think that would get a little tiresome after.
It'd be bad. It would just be bad at a certain point. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think you'll probably go back to it. I bet you'll beat it.
Yeah, I think so. I would feel bad if I didn't beat it. I also obligated to.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I want to hear your final thoughts, and I know that there's stuff at the end that like people. Because I think there's a point where people like really do turn on it, and I would like to hear your.
Yeah, I'm still curious about that. Like, what is gonna happen if it gets people so mad? And like, part of me is almost worried that like I'm not gonna care enough about these characters to be too upset about any kind of big turn. But maybe I will. I don't know. We'll see. I gotta get back to it. But what have you been playing?
So I did have a vacation, so I dabbled in a bunch of different stuff. Didn't get to play nearly as much as I wanted to. The only game I beat on vacation was Frog Fractions, which is not a very long game. Now, are you familiar with Frog Fractions?
I'm a little familiar with this, a little bit, yeah.
So it was a web game, and you know it presents itself as this, you know, educational game. Very quickly, you learn that this is a freak show. This is a weird game where like nothing is what you expected. And
it's kind of like aping off. It's like a subverted math blaster kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's like if like Math Blaster meets Twin Peaks. Is kind of how
That's a pretty good pitch. That should have been the pitch line right there.
Yeah, for real. And it's free on Steam now. So it was a web game. He released it for free on Steam, and it's still that game. And people should go play it. Like even like I'm telling you, it's not really an educational game. That's a spoiler. No, you go see it for yourself. You'll see that it's actually still a delight. Really fun to play through. The thing he did, though, and Jim Stormdancer, the developer, and, you know, he had a lot of help, but you know, the creative director, he released a $10 piece of DLC called Hop's Iconic Hat, and Hop is the name of the frog in Frog Fractions. And if you buy that hat and you wear it, it sort of like starts a version of the game where Hop is putting on a play version of his experience in the original game, and then it all kind of goes weird again. And there's a guy in the audience harassing you, saying that that hat is totally unrealistic. It doesn't fit on a frog's body. How dare you insult my intelligence? And shoving politics down my throat. And it's very good stuff, actually. It's very funny.
I mean, hey, it's free, and it's like 300 megabytes, so I'm downloading it now.
Right, yeah.
I think it's done. I think that's how I was saying that sentence. Yeah. It finished downloading, so hey, what the hell?
Exactly. And like, you know, I think you don't have to go buy the Hop's Iconic Hat and get the whole new Frog Fractions, what is like Frog Fractions 3 or 4 or whatever. But yeah, it's worth it if you want to check it out. I think... play through Frog Fractions, the original, for free. And if you really dig it and you really like it, maybe check out Glitter Mitten Grove first, which is the second game. Technically third. I'm not going to go into it.
Wow.
The ARG.
I didn't realize there was such a deep lineage here.
Yeah, there was a huge ARG to discover what Frog Fractions 2 was.
One of these is called Frog Fractions Cinematic Universe. Sorry.
Yes, basically. Yes. And it's a... I don't know. I love this stuff. It's totally my jam. And yeah, I'm really glad that it's continuing in some way. And it's very short. It's about as long as Frog Fractions, the original, this DLC that you can get. But yeah, it's worth checking out if you want to. I'm trying not to, like, there's a bunch of like stuff out from the game I want to share on Twitter, but I want to give people a chance to discover it for themselves first. So you should play it. I have also been playing, In addition to Fall Guys and Frog Fractions, another F game, Flight Simulator. So I got a code to get the preview version for that, which I don't know if that's still working. I should check and see if I could still play that. But I put in about like 10 hours or so, and boy, that game is just really pretty. It's really pretty, really relaxing once you get going. It's not relaxing when you're like in the A320 and you don't know how anything works, but you could put it on easy mode and it kind of makes it really easy to like just automate everything. And the cool thing about this is it doesn't like turn the physics to easy. Like you still have the same physics of the, like that it's trying to model, where it's like real wind gusts and all this stuff really works how it would. It's just like the buttons on the actual plane are simplified to the point where you press one button and it does like 12 steps for you, that sort of thing.
And I'm like in the middle of a book right now about Apollo 8 called Rocket Man. So I'm like really in the mood for just like a game with a massive control panel, you know?
Yeah,
like, I totally feel that. That seems very relaxing to me right now.
Yes, and that's exactly how I was feeling too, because I was listening to that the BBC pod 13 minutes to the moon or whatever about the Apollo 11, like going from the command module down to the surface. And so I was having the same sort of thing, and it's like this totally scratches that itch, and you really do have the control panel in front of you, and it really does all work, and it has all the meters tell you exactly like accurate measurements and stuff, and it's cool. I think I was very happy to hear that it's going to support VR as well as track IR, which is like the thing you put on the hat and you can move and it looks around. But in VR, being in the cockpit is going to really, really cool. And it's a little bit more difficult when you're in the, when you're looking on a screen, because the cockpit really does like take up so much of your field of view. And if you need to look out the window, it's just this tiny little slice and it's really hard to see anything. And it's that gives me a lot of anxiety, because I'm like, I can't see the runway. This is impossible. How do pilots do this? And you know, the truth is they're looking more at their instruments, I think. But even so, it's like,
dude,
it's
a lot. Sometimes they crash and die.
Yes, exactly. So, and I've done that now a couple times in this thing. And of course, like I flew over my house and stuff, and it was cool to like just do that sort of thing. I think the marquee feature here really are the visuals. It really does a great job of bringing in the satellite imagery and pasting it on top of everything in a way that looks really realistic. And then the weather is so incredible. I kind of can't believe how good it looks. It really is. It lives up to that, that high benchmark I had for it. Turns out though, you're going to want a pretty beefy CPU to run it, cause it's CPU bound, which is, it's going to be on Xbox One. I don't know how that's going to work, but they say they're going to make that happen. So, it's probably going to be very simplified version. I'll have to see that for myself. Then I've been playing a couple other games, two other games, and I want you to play this one, Panzer Paladin.
Yeah, I was curious. Yes, I have, and I saw you play this. And I was curious because it certainly looks like my jam.
I think it's going to be your jam. So it's from the guys that made Flint Hook, from the people that made Flint Hook, and it's unlike Flint Hook, which is sort of like a 16-bit sort of visual style. This one runs it down to like NES Plus sort of thing, and it's like Blaster Master where you're in a mech, and then your character can get out of her mech and then run around and shoot stuff and like get into smaller corridors and stuff. And then you call the mech back. It has a very cool system where it's like, it's definitely mixing up a lot of stuff that we've seen from these kinds of games where like there is a checkpoint system where, I guess I should explain the weapon system first. There's a weapon system where you collect weapons from enemies and the weapons degrade over time. So you can throw a weapon and it's like a 100% like kill if you throw it and you hit the enemy, but then the weapon is consumed instantly. So it's like there's a bunch of risk reward things there, and if you lose all your weapons, you have sort of like a very short sword or almost a knife, which is much less powerful. So you want to kind of be managing your weapons so that you have enough weapons when you go into a boss fight. But if you get to a checkpoint, you can put a weapon into the checkpoint and leave it there, and then when you die, you'll come back to that checkpoint. If you don't leave a weapon there, you go back to the beginning. But also, if you put in the weapon into that checkpoint, you won't have it if you're walking into a boss fight.
Right.
So it's like, okay, so you're juggling these risk rewards, and it's a lot to think about, and it's very cool, and it's got a great style, and the whole idea is that you are in a mech to fight these demons that are invading Earth, and they're invading these different cities. And then each of these cities like has like the demon there, like on the select screen. And it's like Baba Yaga and like this, this like Satan demon that has the goat skull or whatever and stuff like that. It's just a great style. I played it for probably like an hour, and I'm like, I can't wait to go back to this game after I beat Ori, which I'm making a lot of progress.
There you go. Good idea. Yes. Good.
I'm planning to beat that this week, and then we'll talk about that more next week. And then the other game is Carrion, which I think you also should play, which I'm not sure. Does that not look like your thing? Cause it's kind of how I felt when I first saw it.
It also looks like my thing. There's so many of my things apparently right now.
Yeah.
But it is good though.
People that don't know, it's a Metroidvania where you play the monster in a monster movie, like The Thing. And you're just like this biomass, this is a sentient biomass that globs around. And it's not like you have legs. You go into a room that has a bunch of platforms and you press up, and then all of your like sort of tentacles are spreading out and like shooting you up straight up to the direction that you're pointing. And it feels very good to move around. But yeah, it's just it's a really kind of fun Metroidvania game where you are. It's fun to be the monster where like you go into a room and there's people with guns and they're trying to fight you, but they're hopeless, at least at this point in the game. There's no chance that they're going to survive. But then there's also just scientists screaming, and it's fun to like take out a light and like come up to them and just stand there and watch them scream and then growl at them and see them freak out. And then if you want to, if you have like full health and you don't need their biomass to join yours, you could just leave them there and just think about how like they're going to be wondering for the rest of their life, like, why did I survive?
Oh my God. Oh my God, Jeff. It's
incredible. You get, though, you start thinking like that, cause you're like thinking like, I need to be the monster in this movie. It's really good. That game, I was looking at it. I'm like, it's kind of icky. Not necessarily my aesthetic. And then I started playing it, and like I immediately got into character, and it's really, really good. And that's another one. I'm like, okay, I need to put this aside. I'm going to beat Ori, which I'm having a lot of fun with. And then when I get done with that, I'm going to come back to these two games and just play the hell out of them. But I definitely recommend you try out both if you get a chance. There's a few other games, but those are the ones I wanted to talk about. But that does it for me, though. I think we've been going for quite a while. Should we just wrap this show up?
Yeah, I think that's it.
All right. So, let's get into our weekend then. Let's have you tell everybody where they can find you on the internet.
Twitter at Tolkoto, TOLKOTO. Check out 90s Disney at 90sDisney.com. Our Rescue Rangers episode is up, so that's fun stuff there if you are a fan of that show or those NES games or anything like that.
And I'm Jeff Grubb on Twitter. You can also get me on youtube.com/JeffreyGrubb and twitch.tv/JeffGrubb. And my other show, How Games Make Money, will have a new episode going up on Monday. Look out for that. You can just find that just by searching for How Games Make Money wherever you listen to podcasts or on YouTube. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thank you to everybody for listening. We'll be back with another new episode next week. Until then, have a good one. Take care of yourself and goodbye.